enlightened, or to thank you for your efforts to raise them responsibly. Just get going, stick to your guns, and, when in doubt, count. Dress rehearsal. Now you can have some fun. Since some 2-, 3-, and 4-year-olds won't understand everything you've just said, it's a good idea to rehearse or role-play counting for them. It's also very important to rehearse with the older children. Rehearsing the procedure gives the kids a feel for what's going to happen and also tells the children you're serious. Here's what you say next. Kids, let's practice counting. Who wants to start? Okay, Karen, pretend you're whining at me for candy. Can you do a good whine? Kid whines. Wow, that was a good whine. Now I'll say, that's one. Now whine again. And so on. Now take them through the rest of the procedure, so they get a feel for being counted, hitting three, getting to the timeout room or chair, serving the time, abbreviate the timeout, and then being let out. Make sure you praise them in an age-appropriate way for their cooperation. Other possible role plays. The little ones can count a stuffed animal. Mom and Dad can count each other, after one pretends to be a misbehaving kid. The kids can count you, and you go to time out. While on your way to time out, don't go like a goody-two-shoes. Grumble a little. The message. It's okay to not like being counted and going to time out. At this point, you may feel that you're ready to start using the 1-2-3 program. But remember, about half of kids will struggle with the counting system and continue to act out, despite being counted. In the next chapter, we'll discuss the 6 kinds of testing and manipulation that your kids might use to derail the 1-2-3 magic program, and how you can prepare for those behaviors to keep your family on track. Chapter Summary. You're almost ready to begin your first giant parenting step, controlling obnoxious behavior. Part 3. Managing testing and manipulation. 10. Recognizing the 6 types of testing and manipulation. How to prepare for kids resisting 1-2-3 magic. When you are in the warm, friendly parenting mode, you will usually not be frustrating your children. When you are operating from the demanding firm side, however, you will be. As a parent, you have to regularly frustrate your children in 3 main ways. 1. Ask them to start doing things they don't want to do. Homework. Going to bed. 2. Ask them to stop doing things they want to do. Teasing. Whining. And 3. Not give them something they want. Cookie. Toy. When you are frustrating your little ones, the children have 2 choices. First, they can cooperate with what you want and tolerate their own frustration. Most kids gradually learn that frustration is not the end of the world. And as they mature, they begin to get a sense that putting up with present aggravations may actually be the route to future rewards. That ability to delay gratification now for something better later is one foundation of emotional intelligence. On the other hand, frustrated children can engage in what we call testing and manipulation. These are the efforts of the less powerful child to get what he wants, or to avoid discipline by making his parent emotionally confused and consequently sidetracked. 3 things to remember about testing and manipulation. 1. Testing occurs when a child is frustrated. You are not giving him the potato chips he wants. You are counting him. You are making him do homework or go to bed. He doesn't like this, and hopes for a way to get what he wants in spite of the obstacle, you. 2. Testing, therefore, is purposeful behavior. The primary purpose of a child's testing, obviously, is to get his way, rather than have you impose your will on him. If the child still doesn't get his way, testing and manipulation can have a secondary purpose, revenge. 3. When engaging in testing and manipulation, a child has a choice of 6 basic tactics. All 6 can serve the primary purpose of getting one's way, and 5 of the 6 tactics can serve the secondary purpose of revenge. Often a child's testing behavior will represent a combination of one or more of the six basic tactics. Key concept. The first goal of testing is for the child to get what he wants. Since he's less powerful than you are, he must use emotional manipulation. If the child still fails to get what he wants, the second goal of testing is often retaliation or revenge. The kid is going to make you pay for not letting him get his way. All parents will recognize the manipulative tactics we are about to describe. You've likely encountered each of them many times with your children. Grown-ups are usually aware, if they think about it, of which maneuvers are used by which children. Moms and dads may also recognize some of their own favorite strategies, since adults use the same basic manipulative methods to get what they want. By the way, the use of testing and manipulation does not mean that a child is emotionally troubled or in need of psychological care. Attempts to get your way, as well as attempts to punish the bigger people who don't give you your way, are perfectly normal human psychological tactics. The use of testing also does not require an exceptionally high IQ. In fact, adults are often amazed at how naturally and skillfully little kids can produce and modify complex testing strategies. Because our sons and daughters are so naturally skilled, it is very important that adult caregivers understand children's testing tactics and how to manage them. The six basic testing tactics. Here are the six fundamental strategies that children use to try to influence the adults who are frustrating them. 1. Badgering. Why? Badgering is the please, 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 or why routine. Just this once. Mom. Some children could have been machine guns during the last war. The child keeps after you and after you and after you, trying to wear you down with repetition. Just give me what I want and I'll shut up, is the underlying message. Badgering can be particularly taxing when it is done loudly and in public. Some parents attempt to respond to everything the frustrated child says every time she says it. Mom or dad may try to explain, to reassure, or to distract the child. As badgering continues, parents can become more and more desperate, going on the equivalent of a verbal wild goose chase, searching for the right words or reasons to make the child keep quiet. However, many kids are extremely single-minded once their badgering starts. They won't stop until either they get what they want or their parent uses a more effective approach to stop the testing. Badgering is what we refer to as a great blender tactic, since it mixes easily with other manipulative strategies. The basic element in badgering, of course, is repetition. So when any of the other verbal testing tactics are repeated again and again, the resulting manipulative strategy is a combination of that other tactic plus the repetitive power of badgering. 2. Temper, intimidation. I hate you. Displays of temper, or what we sometimes refer to as intimidation, involve obvious aggressive behavior. Younger children, whose language skills aren't quite as developed, may throw themselves on the floor, bang their heads, holler at the top of their lungs, and kick around ferociously. Other kids may come up with arguments that accuse you of being unjust, illogical, or simply a bad parent in general. When frustrated, older kids may also swear or complain angrily. Some children's fits of temper go on for very long periods. Many ADHD and bipolar children, for example, have been known to rant and rave for more than an hour at a time. In the process, they may damage property or trash their rooms. Tantrums will be prolonged even further if, 1, the child has an audience. 2, the adults involved continue talking, arguing, or pleading with the child. Or 3, the adults don't know how to handle the aggression. Temper fits in 2-year-olds can be aggravating, but they can also be funny. My wife took a picture of our son when he was an energetic toddler, having a temper tantrum right in the middle of the ashes in the fireplace at my parents' home. The fire was not going, of course. We all can still laugh at that scene. As kids get older and more powerful, tantrums get more worrisome and just plain scarier. That's why we like to see them well controlled or eliminated by the time a child is 5 or 6. 3. Threat. I'm going to run away from home. Frustrated kids often threaten their parents with dire predictions if the adults don't come across with the desired goods. Here are a few examples. I'm going to run away from home. I'll never speak to you again. I'm going to kill myself. I'm not eating dinner, and I won't do my homework. The message is clear. Something bad is going to happen unless you give me what I want immediately. Give me the Twinkie right before dinner. Stop counting me. Don't make me go to bed, or else. Some of the threats that younger children come up with are funny. One little girl, whose mother was trying to get her to go to bed, angrily shouted, "All right, I'll go. But I'm going to lie there all night with my eyes open." Another child, a 6-year-old boy, was counted and timed out by his father for squirting the dog with a hose. The boy threatened to run away, actually packed a small bag, and walked out the front door. After 5 minutes, however, he walked back in the door and yelled at his dad, "I couldn't run away because you guys won't let me cross the street." Other threats are not funny. Some frustrated children threaten to kill themselves, and this is something no parent takes lightly. Parents wonder if these threats are just manipulative, or if their child really wants to die. 2 questions can help parents sort out this dilemma. First of all, is this child generally happy? Does she enjoy life most of the time, have friends, do okay in school, and fit into the family? If the answers to these questions are positive, it is less likely that the child truly wants to end her life. Second, did the suicidal threat come out of the blue, or was the comment a response to some obvious recent frustration? If "I'm going to kill myself" comes out of nowhere, the threat is always more worrisome and needs to be looked into. 4. Martyrdom. I never get anything. Martyr-like testing tactics are a perennial favorite of children. When using martyrdom, the child may indicate that his life has become totally unfair and an incredible burden. "No one around here loves me anymore. I never get anything." Or, "You like her more than me," are examples. Or the child may actually do something that has a self-punitive, self-denying flavor, such as not eating dinner, sitting in the closet for an hour, or staring out the window without talking. Crying, pouting, and simply looking sad or teary can also be useful manipulative devices. The goal of martyrdom, obviously, is to make the parent feel guilty, and martyrdom can be surprisingly effective. This testing tactic is very difficult for adults to handle. Many moms and dads seem to have a guilt button the size of the state of Wyoming. All the kids have to do is push that button, and they wind up running the house. Children learn early on that parents are highly invested in the welfare of their offspring. Kids know their caregivers want them to be safe, happy, and healthy. Unfortunately, kids also seem to naturally appreciate the logical consequence of this adult commitment. Acting hurt or deprived can be a powerful way of influencing adult behavior. 2-year-olds, for example, will sometimes hold their breath until they turn blue when they are mad about not getting what they want. Many parents wonder how a child could even come up with an idea like that. One creative child, whose mother had just sent her to her bedroom, was heard yelling out her window, "I can't breathe! I can't breathe!" This tactic may have been creative, but it was not effective. 5. Butter up. You're the nicest dad in the world. The 5th tactic, butter up, takes an approach that's different from the first 4. Instead of making you feel uncomfortable, the child tries to make you feel good. You may run the risk of losing this good feeling if you subsequently frustrate the child. "Gee, Mom, you've got the prettiest eyes of anybody on the block," is a fairly blatant example. Or, I think I'll go clean my room. It's been looking kind of messy for the last 3 weeks. And after that, maybe I'll take a look at the garage. With Butter Up, the basic message from child to parent is, you'll feel really bad if you mistreat or discipline or deny me after how nice I've been to you. Butter Up is intended to be an advanced setup for parental guilt. The child is implying, you'll feel so positively toward me that you won't have the heart to make me feel bad. Children can use promises as Butter Up manipulation. Please, Mom, please. I'll eat my dinner, and I promise I won't even ask for any dessert, said one little girl who wanted a snack at 5 in the afternoon. Some promises kids make are impossibilities. One little boy, while in the process of pressing his father for a new computer, said, I'll never ask you for anything ever again. Apologies can be sincere, but they can also be examples of butter-up testing. I'm sorry, I'm sorry. I said I'm sorry, one little boy pleaded, in an attempt to avoid being grounded for socking his little brother. Butter-up manipulation is obviously the least obnoxious of all the testing tactics. In fact, some people don't think it should be labeled as testing at all. It is true that butter-up is sometimes hard to distinguish from genuine affection. If a child says, I love you, and doesn't ask for anything immediately afterward, it's probably genuine affection. And if a child who asks if he can have a friend over if he cleans up his room may be proposing a straightforward and legitimate deal. But if you've ever heard a parent say, the only time my son's ever nice is when he wants something, that person is probably referring to the butter-up tactic. 6. Physical tactics. Pow. Whack. Bam. From a parent's perspective, this form of testing is perhaps the worst strategy of all. Here, the frustrated child may physically attack an adult, break something, or run away. Physical methods of trying to get one's way are more common in smaller children who don't have well-developed language skills. When the use of this type of testing continues beyond age 4 or 5, we begin to worry. Some kids have a long history of this kind of behavior, and the bigger the child gets, the scarier their use of physical strategies gets. For example, some parents who use timeouts tell us that their children sometimes physically attack when the parent is trying to escort the child to the timeout area. Some children become quite ferocious, kicking, biting, scratching, pinching, and hitting while yelling at the top of their lungs. Other frustrated, physically oriented kids will smash or break things, sometimes even their own possessions. One 10-year-old boy, for instance, was sent to his room for fighting with his brother. The door to his bedroom happened to be shut when he got to it. So he gave it one of his best karate kicks, cracking the door down the middle. Another boy smashed a coffee mug on the tile floor in the front hall of the house. Unfortunately, one of the larger pieces of the mug went flying into the glass storm door, which shattered. Another physical testing tactic, running away, is not used a lot by younger children. Threats to run away appear more often in kids under 7. One 7-year-old boy used a different version of this idea on his mother, who had just denied his request to go outside. The boy sneaked down to the basement and hid for 2 hours, not responding to anyone who called his name. The tactic was effective, at least in punishing his mother, who was beside herself with worry. What's going on here? Most kids, of course, would never be able to describe the underlying mechanics of testing. But we can tell you exactly what's going on. Here's how it works. The 6 testing and manipulation tactics share a common dynamic. Without quite knowing what he's doing, the child is in effect saying to the parent, "Look, you're making me uncomfortable by not giving me what I want. You're making me get out of bed. You're counting me for teasing my sister. Or you're not buying me a treat. But now I'm also making you uncomfortable with my badgering, tantrums, ominous statements, etc. Now that we're both uncomfortable, I'll make you a deal. You call off your dogs, and I'll call off mine. If you do give in and give the child what he wants, You are guaranteed that any testing will stop immediately. In a split second, no more hassles. Some people say, thank heaven, there's a way of getting rid of testing and manipulation. There certainly is, but what's the catch? The catch, of course, is who's running your house. It certainly isn't you. It's the kids. All they have to do during a conflict is get out their big manipulative guns, and you are chopped liver. Quick tip. A child who is testing you is offering you a deal. Give me what I want, and my badgering, temper, threat, or martyrdom will stop immediately. Does that sound like a deal you can't refuse? Think again. Who's pushing your buttons? Think of each of your kids, one at a time, and ask yourself, does this child have a favorite testing tactic? One that he or she uses very frequently, or all the time? If your answer is yes, that's bad news. Why? Because that means the testing ploy works for the child. People don't generally repeat behavior that doesn't work for them. Let's recall the two purposes of testing and manipulation. First of all, a testing strategy works when the child successfully gets his way by using that tactic. How do you know if a child is getting his way by testing? It's obvious. You just gave it to him. You gave him the snack right before dinner. Turn the TV back on while he's doing homework. Stop counting him when he's teasing the dog. Or don't make him go to bed. Caution. Does your child have a favorite testing tactic? If your answer is yes, that means the strategy is working, either by, 1, getting the child her way, or 2, allowing her to get revenge on the adult she is testing. The idea that the testing tactic works can also refer to the second purpose of testing and manipulation, revenge. Children will repeat tactics that provide an effective way of retaliating against the adults who are causing the frustration. How does a child know if she is effectively getting revenge? The answer takes us right back to the no talking, no emotion rules. If your child can get you very upset and get you talking too much, she knows she's got you. Children know they are getting effective revenge when their parents say things like, "How many times do I have to tell you? Why can't you just take no for an answer? Are you trying to drive me nuts?" The angry part of your frustrated child will find comments like these satisfying. And the next time your child is upset with you, he will know exactly how to press the revenge button. Let's imagine that you want your son to do his homework, for example, and he has a tantrum, tactic 2, because he wants to watch TV instead. If you don't follow the no talking and no emotion rules, your response turns into a counter-temper tantrum. You get more upset than your son did. Final score, child 1, parent 0. He got satisfaction from getting the angry, big splash out of the larger, more powerful adult. Other kids retaliate by making their parents feel guilty. Imagine that your daughter, when asked to go to bed, resorts to martyrdom, tactic 4. "Well, it's obvious that nobody around here loves me anymore. I might as well hitchhike to the next state and find a family more compatible with my basic needs." Here she adds a touch of threat. Tactic 3. You feel frightened and guilty. You are certain that unloved children grow up to be degenerates or serial killers. Your response is to sit your daughter down on your lap and tell her for half an hour how much you love her, how much Dad and the dog love her, and so on. You've just been had by Tactic 4, martyrdom. You are squirming and uncomfortable, and your child is making you pay for your parenting sins. Always remember this. Unless you are a grossly neglectful or abusive parent, your kids know that you love them. By all means, tell them that you love them, but never tell them that when they're pulling Tactic 4 on you. How to manage testing and manipulation. Now, let's say you're getting into the spirit of 1-2-3 magic, and you're toughening up some. Your 10-year-old son wants to go to a friend's house at 9 on a school night. You deny his request and tell him it's too late. The following scene occurs. "Why not? Come on, just this once." badgering. Can't do it. I never get anything. Martyrdom, badgering. I don't think you're too underprivileged. I'll clean the garage tomorrow. Butter up, badgering. The garage is okay the way it is. I just cleaned it. This stinks. I hate your guts. Intimidation, badgering. Sorry. The child throws a book on the floor. Physical tactic. Watch your step, pal. Please, please. Oh, come on, it's not so late. Badgering. No way, not tonight. If you don't let me, I'm running away. Threat. Badgering. This interaction may be aggravating, but in a way, it's good. Why? Because something constructive is happening. The child is fishing around, switching tactics, and probing for your weak spot. But he can't find a weak spot. You are sticking to your guns. Not only that, but you are remaining fairly calm in spite of the aggravation. There is one thing wrong with this example, however, and that has to do with how you handle testing and manipulation. You would not let the child switch tactics that many times, and you would also not talk so much. What should you do then? Well, if you look at our list of 6 testing tactics, 5 of them, except butter up, are stop behavior. As you know, stop behavior should be counted. So if a child was pushing you this much, he should be counted. This is how the scene should be handled using the 1-2-3 program. Remember that the boy has already been given an explanation. Why not? Come on, just this once. Badgering. That's 1. I never get anything. Martyrdom, badgering. That's 2. I'll clean the garage tomorrow. Butter up, badgering. That's 3. Take 10. The third count is more for the badgering than the butter up, but it's obvious this kid's not going to give up until the parent gently but firmly puts his foot down. That goal is achieved by counting and the resulting time out. Remember, with the exceptions of butter up and passive pouting, testing and manipulation should be counted, especially in the beginning when you're just starting 1-2-3 magic. Once the kids are used to the discipline system, the less aggressive, less obnoxious forms of testing can, at your discretion, occasionally be ignored. The effectiveness of not responding at all, verbally or nonverbally, to a child's testing can be evaluated by how quickly the child gives up the battle. Many kids soon learn that no response from you, ignoring, means they're not going to get their way or get effective revenge. Which testing tactic is the most common? Badgering, temper, threat, martyrdom, butter-up, and physical tactics are all methods children use to get their way with adults. And all these tactics, except butter-up, can also be used by kids to punish the uncooperative adults who obstinately persist in refusing to give the children what they want. We have taken several surveys of parents and teachers, asking which tactics they thought children used the most. Interestingly, both groups of grown-ups always mention the same 3, badgering, temper, and the overwhelming favorite, martyrdom. You will also be interested to know that the most annoying manipulative maneuver used by children is a tactic that combines 2 of the 3 favorites. This tactic, which drives many parents absolutely nuts, is a combination of martyrdom, 4, and badgering, 1. The word describing it starts with the letter W. You guessed it. Whining. What to expect in the beginning. As we mentioned before, once you start counting, the kids will fall primarily into 2 categories, immediate cooperators and immediate testers. If you're lucky to have immediate cooperators, enjoy it. You will feel more affectionate toward your children because they are listening to you. You will want to have more fun with your kids, talk with them, praise them, and listen to them. You will enjoy working on building a good relationship. This good relationship, in turn, will make counting, 1, less necessary, and 2, a lot easier when it is necessary. Immediate testers, however, get worse at first. When you let them know you're going to be the boss, and you take away the power of their favorite testing strategies, these children deteriorate in two ways. Some will up the ante with a particular testing tactic. The volume and length of a child's tantrums, for example, may double. Badgering may become more intense or aggressive, and martyrdom may become more whiny and pathetic. The other unpleasant change you may see initially in non-cooperators is tactic switching. The kids may try manipulative strategies you haven't seen before, or they may return to others they haven't used for years. The most common switches involve going from badgering and martyrdom, and whining, to temper. Some kids, quite understandably, blow up when their attempts to wear you down with repetition or make you feel guilty fail. Although tactic switching is aggravating, remember that switching is almost always a sign that you were doing well at sticking to your guns. Keep it up. What do you do when you're faced with tactic escalation and tactic switching? Several things are important. 1. Don't get discouraged. This is a normal stage many children go through while adjusting to 1-2-3 magic. 2. Count when necessary. 3. Keep your mouth shut, except for necessary explanations and the counting itself. Eventually, tactic escalation and tactic switching will diminish, and your children will accept your discipline without having a fit every time you have to frustrate them. You then have won the battle. You are the parent. They are the children. And your home is a more peaceful place. Quick tip. When in doubt, count. One final word. After cooperating initially, some kids become delayed testers later. Delayed testing can occur after the novelty of the new system wears off, when the children begin to realize that they aren't getting their way anymore, or if your routine gets disrupted by travel, visitors, illness, new babies, or other factors. If you're unprepared for it, delayed testing can be a bit disillusioning. You think to yourself, the kids were so good before. You may feel like the whole system is falling apart, or that it was too good to be true. Fortunately, the remedy is not far away. Read 1-2-3 Magic again. Watch the DVD. Discuss the suggestions with your spouse, if possible. Then get back to basics. Practice no talking, no emotion. Be gentle but aggressive. And, when in doubt, count. 11. Tales from the Trenches. Real Stories from Real Parents. Now, let's study some examples of the 1-2-3 in action, to give you a feel for how and when counting can be used. Our stories and commentaries will illustrate some of the basic do's and don'ts involved with the procedure. In some of our examples, when our parents don't do so well with their discipline the first time around, we'll give them a chance to correct their mistakes. Wouldn't it be nice if you had that opportunity in real life? Guess what? You do. Sibling Rivalry 1. Round 1. Like most siblings, 9-year-old John and 7-year-old Brittany are the best of friends and the worst of enemies. They are playing with Legos on the living room floor. Dad is watching the football game on TV and is amazed the kids are getting along so well, but the fun is about to end. "Brittany, I need another wheel for my tank," says John. "No, John, I've got it on my wagon," Brittany says. Dad squirms in his chair. It's fourth and goal for the good guys. "Let me just use one wheel now. I'll give it back to you later," suggests brother. "No, my wagon needs four wheels," replies sister. "Your wagon looks stupid." "Dad, John's going to take one of my wheels, and I had them first." Dad's team had to try for a field goal, and it was blocked. Dad is not pleased. "Both of you, knock it off." "She doesn't need to hog all the wheels. There aren't enough for me to make what I want, and they're my Legos." "But I made this first." "Okay, kids. That's one for both of you." "She's an idiot." John smashes his creation and leaves. How did he do? Pretty good discipline job by Dad. Perhaps he should have counted a little bit sooner, instead of growling, "knock it off." Should Dad have counted John for smashing his tank or bad-mouthing his sister? Some parents would count these behaviors, but others wouldn't, because the tank was John's, and it can be rebuilt. John may also be doing the right thing by leaving the situation. Round 2. Second Chance. Let's give Dad another chance to improve his parenting technique. "Brittany, I need another wheel for my tank," says John. "No, John, I've got it on my wagon," Brittany says. Dad squirms in his chair. It's fourth and goal for the good guys. "Let me just use one wheel now. I'll give it back to you later," suggests brother. "No, my wagon needs four wheels," replies sister. "Your wagon looks stupid. Kids, that's one for both of you." Dad's team had to try for a field goal, and it was blocked. Dad is not pleased. "She doesn't need to hog all the wheels. There aren't enough for me to make what I want, and they're my Legos. But I made this first." "Okay, kids, that's two." How did he do? Dad did much better this time, especially since he was extra aggravated after his team blew its scoring opportunity. Excellent self-control, and an excellent job of not taking out his extra frustration on the kids. Sibling Rivalry 2. Sean, 9, and Tammy, 11, are getting into it while trying to play Scrabble in the living room. Dad is washing dishes in the kitchen. "It's my turn." "No, it isn't. You lost it 'cause you took so long." "Give me that. I was going to pick up that one." "You scratched me." "I did not, you idiot. You started it." "You're so dumb it isn't funny." Dad enters. "What's going on here?" "She's cheating." "I am not, lame brain. You're too slow." "Be quiet, both of you. Tell me what happened." General yelling and chaos follow the ill-fated inquiry. "Okay, that's one for both of you." General yelling and chaos continue. "That's two." Sean turns over the Scrabble board, grabs a bunch of letters, and throws them at the piano. "Sean, that's three. Take a rest for 10. How did he do? Dad recovered pretty well after beginning badly by asking the world's most ridiculous question. He should have started counting earlier. 1, 2, 3, separate. Joey, 8, and Maddie, 6, are in the family room. Joey is playing with his dinosaurs, and Maddie is working on a puzzle. Janet is a single mom who is enjoying the peace and quiet while cooking dinner in the kitchen. Maddie starts humming to herself. After a few seconds, Joey asks her to stop. She says she won't. The bickering escalates. "Joey, Maddie, that's one," says Mom. Both children are now on a count of one, according to the usual sibling rivalry and counting procedure. In this situation, however, if the kids hit three, Mom has decided that she will use a unique form of timeout alternative that is also a natural consequence of their actions. Refer to Chapter 12. The bickering continues through a count of two. So at three, Mom says, "Okay, guys, that's three. Separate." This means that the children have to go to different places. They cannot be together. It's like the old bar closing adage. You don't have to go to your room, but you can't stay here. Both kids must leave the room they were sharing. Where they go is their choice, except they cannot choose the same place. They may bring their toys. How did she do? Good creativity by this mother. Separating them is more of an interruption or redirection than a punishment. Separation can also be useful if the kids share a room and can't both go there for time out. The separation period can last the usual 1 minute per year of life, or it can be longer, until dinner is served, for instance. If the kids don't comply, the usual timeout is in order. Trouble at the grocery store. Round 1. Rita is 4 years old and loves to go shopping at the grocery store with her mom. The reason she loves shopping trips is because the store has kiddie carts she can push around, just like her mother does. Rita's mom, however, does not enjoy shopping with her daughter quite as much. The reason Mom does not like these shopping trips is because, sooner or later, Rita always starts running around with the cart. Last week, the little girl ran into the big shopping cart of an older gentleman. Although the man was nice about it, and even laughed, Mom is afraid her daughter will hurt someone. Talk about the devil and the deep blue sea. If Mom doesn't let Rita have a cart, the girl will throw a raging fit, guaranteed, in front of everyone in the store. Mom feels her daughter is running the show. Mom is correct. Here's how the scene goes when Mom and Rita enter the store. Mom, can I push a cart? I don't think so, dear. Not today. Look at the fuzzy bear sign. Why can't I? I just told you, dear. Now, please don't start giving me a hard time. I want to push my own one. Now stop that. That's enough. Come on, we've got a lot of things to get. I never get to do anything. Rita starts crying loudly. Okay, okay, stop that. Mom gets a kiddie cart for Rita. She grabs the cart, but Mom holds the cart for a second and looks at her daughter firmly. Rita, look at me. You have to promise me you won't run with the cart. You might hurt someone. Do you understand me? Yes. And you promise you won't run with the cart? Yes. Say, I promise. I promise. Okay. Now let's get our stuff. I'll put some things in your cart. Rita does just fine for 6 minutes. Then she starts running with her kitty cart, giggling as she zooms past the spaghetti sauce. Her mother pretends she doesn't notice, but then she cuts the shopping trip short after getting only one-third of the things she needed. Maybe she can come back later and get the rest of what she wants by herself. How did she do? A classic example of a child intimidating a parent with the threat of public embarrassment. Mom is intimidated into a desperate attempt at little adult reasoning. You might hurt someone. And the elicitation of futile promises. Round 2. Let's give Mom another chance to get this one right. Actually, Rita's mother has two choices. 1. Counting Rita for speeding, and at count 3, taking away the cart. And 2. Not letting Rita have a cart in the first place. Option 1. Counting Rita for speeding. Mom, can I push a cart? Yes, dear. But you have to walk with it. If I count you to 3 for running, I'll take the cart away. Rita does fine for 3 minutes, then starts running with the kitty cart. Rita, that's 1. At 3, you lose the cart. How did she do? This approach is much better. There will probably be hell to pay if Rita hits 3 and has her cart taken away. So Mom should be ready to take the little girl out to the car for a while until she finishes her tantrum. If returning to the car is necessary, no parental "I told you so" comments are allowed. Option 2. Not letting Rita have the kitty cart. Mom, can I push a cart? No. Last time you ran with it. Why can't I? That's 1. I want to push my own 1. That's 2. How did she do? Good work, Mom. Dog teasing. 4-year-old Michael has the dog backed into a corner and pushed up against the wall. The dog, normally patient, looks uncomfortable. Mom intervenes. Michael, please don't tease the dog, honey. Michael giggles and continues pushing the dog against the wall. That's 1. No, I want to pet him. For the first time, the dog snarls. That's 3. Take 5. The dog is mad and could bite you. I want to pet him. Michael falls on the floor, releasing the dog, but yelling and crying. Mom carries the unwilling body to the bedroom for time out. How did she do? Couldn't have done it better. When the dog snarled, Mom went straight to 3 because of the danger. No talking while escorting the child to the rest period. Bedtime problem. It's 9 o'clock in the evening. Alex is playing an electronic game on the couch in the living room. His mother enters the room. Alex, it's time to get ready for bed. Entranced with his game, Alex does not respond at all. Alex, that's 1. How did she do? Should counting be used for bedtime? No. Getting ready for bed is a start behavior. Actually, a series of start behaviors that take a while to complete. Counting is for obnoxious behavior, such as whining, arguing, teasing, or tantrums, where cooperation takes only a few seconds. For bedtime, this mom needs a bedtime routine. Refer to Chapter 17. Constant requests. 8-year-old Tom asks his mother if he can use his dad's electric jigsaw in the basement tool room. I don't think so. You better wait until Daddy's home.
Oh, come on, Mom. I know how to do it.
No, I think it's too dangerous.
There's nothing else to do.
Badgering, martyrdom. I said no. That's one.
That's one. That's two. That's three. That's 12. That's 20. That's stupid.
Intimidation. That's two.
Didn't know you could count that high.
Intimidation. That's three. Take 10 and add 5 for the mouth.
Gee, I'll need a calculator for this one.
Mom moves toward Tom to escort him if necessary, but he goes to his bedroom. How did she do? Mom did very well. One explanation, and then she counted. Mom also adds 5 for the smart mouth, and she has the presence of mind to stay cool in spite of the insult. When her son doesn't go to the rest period right away, she also does not get caught up in an argument or little adult conversation. Interrupting. Round 1. Mom and Dad are having a private conversation on the couch about the recent hospitalization of Mom's father. 7-year-old Michelle jumps in between them.
Hi, guys.
Hi, honey. Listen, Mom and Dad have to talk about something very important for a few minutes, so you go play for a little bit.
I want to be here with you. I promise I won't listen.
No, dear. Come on now, you go and play.
I don't have anything to do.
Badgering. Listen, young lady, we're not going to tell you again.
There's nothing else for me to do.
Intimidation.
Do you want a spanking?
Michelle starts crying.
Martyrdom.
Okay, that's one. Michelle leaves, crying. How did they do? Pretty sloppy job by Mom and Dad. In fairness to these parents, this is a touchy situation, because Michelle's entrance is very friendly, and these parents don't want to tell her what they're discussing just yet. They only get around to counting after ridiculous attempts at persuasion, threatening a spanking, and risking World War III for nothing. They eventually recover and count, but some damage still has been done. Round 2. Second chance. Let's take it from the top.
Hi, guys.
Hi, honey. Listen, Mom and Dad have to talk about something very important for a few minutes, so you go play for a little bit.
I want to be here with you. I promise I won't listen.
That's one.
I don't have anything to do.
Badgering. That's two. Michelle leaves, a bit teary. How did they do? Mom and Dad probably feel a bit guilty, but they handled the situation well. You can't give the kids everything they want. Arguing. As Mom is working in the kitchen after dinner, 11-year-old Jeff asks, "Can I go out after dinner to play?"
"No, dear. You still have homework to do," says Mom.
"I'll do it when I come back in, right before bed."
"That's what you said last night, honey, and it didn't work. Remember?"
"Oh, please, Mom, I promise."
Badgering, butter up. "Get your homework done first, and then you can go out. If you work hard, it shouldn't take more than a half hour."
"Why can't I just go out now? I'll do my stupid homework."
Intimidation. That's one.
"I can't wait to grow up so I can go in the army. It's got to be more fun than living in this dump."
Martyrdom. That's two.
"All right, all right, all right."
Jeff goes to start his homework. How did she do? Mom did very well here. She tried a little negotiating, but when that didn't work, she didn't get caught up in a useless argument or try to explain why her house wasn't the same as the military. Extreme possessiveness. Haley is 4 years old. She has a play date at her house with another little girl, Alyssa, whom she has just met.
Unfortunately, everything Alyssa touches, Haley tries to take away from her. Alyssa is not aggressive at all, but just stands there looking bewildered after a new toy has been taken from her hands. Mom sees the pattern. Alyssa picks up a small red car. Haley moves in and grabs it. Mom says, "Haley, that's one. You must let Alyssa play with something." Haley still doesn't let go. "Haley, that's two." The little girl releases her hold and lets Alyssa have the car. "That's very nice of you, sweetheart." How did she do? Good job. Briefly explain, count, and praise cooperation. For the little ones, we allow parents to provide a short explanation with the first count, for example. No hitting. Hitting hurts people. That's one. Conclusion. What have our tales from the trenches taught us? Kids can certainly catch you off guard, for one thing. You have to be on your toes and, to be fair to yourself and the children, you have to make reasonable and fairly rapid decisions about which offenses are countable and which are not. Good counting takes a little bit of practice, but once you master the skill, you'll wonder how you ever got along without this sanity-saving technique. Chapter Summary. Is it magic? The magic of the 1-2-3 procedure is not in the counting itself. The power of the method comes primarily from your ability to accomplish two goals. Your first objective is to explain, when necessary, and then keep quiet. Your second objective is to count as calmly and unemotionally as you can. Do these two things well, and your children will start listening to you. Part 4. Encouraging Good Behavior. Parenting Job 2. 12. Establishing Positive Routines. How to motivate your children to do the things they need to do. Now we turn our attention to your second big parenting job. Encouraging your children to do the positive things you want them to do. We call this behavior category start behavior, because you want your children to start doing their schoolwork, going to bed, eating their supper, cleaning their rooms, and getting up and out in the morning. Recall that start behavior requires more motivation from children than stop behavior. While it may take only 1 second to stop whining or arguing, tasks such as doing homework or getting off to school may require 30 minutes or more. Kids not only have to start these jobs, they also have to continue and finish them. Counting difficult behavior is fairly easy. When it comes to encouraging positive behavior, however, moms and dads have to be more skilled motivators. When they're beginning 1-2-3 magic, most parents use counting to manage stop behavior for a week to 10 days, before tackling start behavior. If you try to do the whole program at once, both stop and start problems, it may be confusing or take too much energy. Equally important, it will be a lot easier to get the kids to do the good things if they know you have gotten back in control of the house by effectively managing their obnoxious conduct. When you begin using your start behavior tactics, don't be surprised if you run into testing and manipulation. Your daughter may not thank you for training her to clean her room. If you have worked on counting negative behavior first, you will have had a fair amount of experience in dealing with stop behavior before you tackle the task of getting the kids to do the good things. So have your counting strategy ready in your back pocket. In dealing with start behavior, keep in mind one of the basic rules of 1-2-3 magic. Train the children or keep quiet. The 1-2-3 program includes a method for handling just about every kind of problem your kids can throw at you. So use these methods. Kids, for example, are not born to be natural room cleaners. If the child isn't cleaning his room, train him to clean it. Otherwise, be quiet. Clean it yourself, or close the door and don't look. Training does not mean nagging, arguing, yelling, or hitting. Quick tip. With start behavior, you can use more than one tactic at a time for a particular problem. You may even come up with some of your own strategies. Remember, train your kids to do what you want, or keep quiet.
Wonderful, powerful routines.
Many people think the word routine means bad and boring. You will soon learn that when it comes to start behavior, routines are wonderful and powerful. Activities like homework and going to bed are complex and take time. Kids have to learn to regularly follow a fixed sequence of actions. Same time, same place, same way. Once a routine is mastered, kids tend to do it automatically. Routines for positive behavior drastically reduce your discipline problems, and they can also make testing and manipulation virtually non-existent. We'll discuss more about how to establish routines at the end of this chapter.
The 7 Start Behavior Tactics.
There are 7 start behavior tactics that you can consider using to establish and maintain your routines. Sometimes you may use just one tactic, but other times you may use 2 or 3 for the same problem. While counting obnoxious behavior is fairly straightforward, you can be more creative and flexible in managing positive behavior. In fact, many parents and teachers have come up with useful and imaginative ideas that are not on our list. Here are our 7 strategies for encouraging good behavior.
1. Positive reinforcement.
2. Simple requests.
3.
Kitchen timers.
4.
The docking system.
5.
Natural consequences.
6.
Charting.
7.
Counting variation. With these rules in mind, let's take a look at the 7 tactics you will use to get the kids to do what they're supposed to.
1. Positive reinforcement.
Why is there a home field advantage in sports? It's because the crowd encourages their team by cheering and applauding. Even for adult professional athletes, this type of praise is a strong motivator. Unfortunately, the effect of this home field advantage doesn't always translate from stadiums to home.
Why?
Angry people make noise. Happy people keep quiet. That's why. We all suffer from a biological curse that motivates us to say something to our kids when we're angry at them, but to keep quiet when the little ones are doing what we want them to do. Imagine it's a Sunday in October, and I'm watching a football game in the afternoon. My 2 children are in the next room playing a game together, having a great time, and getting along very well. What do you think the chances are that I'm going to get up out of my chair, walk all the way into the next room, and say, "Gee, I'm delighted you guys are having such a good time"? That would be a great thing, but the chances of my doing it are about 0. Why? Because when adults are happy and content themselves, they are not particularly motivated to do anything more than what they are already doing. But imagine that my children in the next room start fighting and screaming. Why do they behave this way? I can't even hear the football game. Now I am motivated. I'm mad. Now the chances of my getting up, running into the other room, and yelling at the kids to keep quiet are high. Anger is a much better motivator than contentment. The result is that our kids are more likely to hear from us when we have negative rather than positive feedback. One powerful antidote to this unfortunate natural inclination is praise, or positive verbal reinforcement. Your praise and other positive interactions with your kids should outnumber your negative comments by a ratio of about 3 to 1. If you look, you shouldn't have trouble finding some positive behavior to reinforce. Thanks for doing the dishes. You started your homework all by yourself. That dog really likes you. You kids did a great job of getting along during the movie. I think you got ready for school in record time this morning. Good job on that math test, John. I saw you out on the soccer field. You played hard. Good hustle. That's wonderful. I can't believe it. How on earth did you do that? Once the kids are successfully carrying out a particular start behavior routine, praise can help keep the cooperation or good performance going. Many parents, for example, praise or thank their kids for complying with simple requests, or for following a bedtime or homework routine. Keep a sensitive eye on your son or daughter, though, because praise should be tailored to each child and each situation. Some kids like rather elaborate, syrupy, and emotional verbal reinforcement, while others do not. Imagine, for example, your 8-year-old daughter getting 100% on her spelling test. You say, "Oh, Melissa, that's just marvelous. I can't believe it.